Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
I found success over this decade because I want the individuals in my board or on my teams to succeed in their world. And then I believe if they're succeeding, I'll continue to find those connections that will help actually everybody succeed.
Welcome to the Schmidt List, the podcast for people dedicated to managing successful projects, developing impactful products, and building engaged teams. And now, here's your host, Kurt Schmidt.
Dan, thank you so much for joining me on the show today.
It is a privilege to be here, Kurt.
Oh, it's my privilege, honestly. I am super excited to talk to you. You've got such an interesting background. I mean, you've got 4 or 5 business cards as it is.
There's four.
Maybe more.
I may need a fifth, but I think there's four right now.
There could be a fifth. Okay, I just want to make sure. But tell me a little bit about what you're doing now. How did you get into it? And yeah, what's the story with Dan right now?
Yeah, I feel like my bio on Twitter is the best description.
Okay.
Brief sentence description of who I am and what I'm doing. So I'll just read that and then I'll backfill it as quickly as I can.
That sounds great.
At Dan Collison, MPLS, a civic leader and pastor who spends most days bringing people together across sectors through interdisciplinary work for the purpose of human flourishing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And
it is a lot.
I fulfill that through the 4 business cards of being a lead pastor at First Covenant Church, Minneapolis, director of downtown partnerships for the Minneapolis Downtown Council, executive director of the Easttown Business Partnership, and executive director of the New Loop Partners in the North Loop. And all of that, believe it or not, fills out a very busy week, but does have a lot of synergy. But to the point of this podcast and some of the conversation we've been having about, you know, leading with influence, but not necessarily with position. Mm-hmm. It feels like my whole world is about that.
Yeah.
In these boards that I lead, you know, at the church, not just running a traditional church, but running a multi-tenant nonprofit like environment. And then bringing this larger conversation of how can downtown Minneapolis be everyone's downtown?
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. Well, thank you for sharing that. And that's why I wanted to have you on the show, because a lot of the people I talk to on the show, a lot of times they're working at the same company and they're trying to influence people within the same company to get on board with their new ideas and their different things. But what's unique about you is that for those people, they all can say like, hey, we're all on the same team, right? But you're working with groups that are literally not on the same team. And right. I don't mean like in a negative way, but it is these small businesses and then politicians. And then it's everything from MnDOT to Target or something.
Right.
And trying to tie those people together, right? So when you started that volunteering work, How did you first get in, enter into the community, and where did you start? Like, where did you find the most value when you started that volunteering effort?
Yeah, I found some incredible traction, and I would say even happiness, in recognizing that the business community in the east side of downtown is very eclectic. You've got like these nonprofits, charities, as well as multinational billion-dollar corporations that are all in the same space, and then a billion-dollar annual budget, Hennepin Healthcare campus system, as well as architects and some medium-sized companies. And the thing that I awoke into that was really interesting when I first started volunteering, and then I became the board chair of the what's now called the Easttown Business Partnership, is that people really cared about every piece of the community, mm-hmm. not just their silo, not just their business or their company. But when it came to doing something collectively, things got challenging. Okay. Let me give you an example. $3 billion in 6 years is a lot.
It is.
It's historic. In fact, New York Times covered our part of downtown in relationship to Super Bowl 52, because yep. we hosted Super Bowl 52, but largely about the land use conversation. How is it possible that 100 blocks of land on a part of town that had just been parking lots and largely just parked cars for the former stadium mm-hmm. actually now have housing, like hundreds of units of housing and a new parks and riverfront and new clinics? And I mean, it's really been amazing. Well, that's a long answer that mm-hmm. I'm not going to spend time with, that to this question about how do you bring people together when you can't just tell them what do they do, they don't report to you.
Right.
Well, that moment when all of this was getting going in 2012, I just began showing up everywhere. I'd mm-hmm. show up at City Hall, I'd show up at the county boardroom, I would show up in the neighborhood association meetings. And my really fun part of this was getting to know individual people.
Mm-hmm.
Who were they? What's their backstory? How did they get to their role? How do they see their role? How do they understand their institution? How do they understand their cultural fabric of their institution? By the way, also in relationship to other people I know in that institution,
yeah, sure.
right?
Yep.
And within those conversations, and I've always made this discipline with the leaders I have the privilege of getting to know, is to have that one-on-one, you know, where we sit down for 45 minutes for an hour, get to the personal story of who they are, their large goals as well as their specific goals. And I just have this really big passion about people. And there was a moment when I was serving on all these implementation committees, I was serving on sort of this coordinating effort so that all of that was going on that side of town was like, we were hosting community meetings, mm-hmm. we were doing engagement, I was meeting with developers, I was meeting neighbor associations, I mean, elected officials, the stadium leaders, the Vikings, I mean, everybody. And in that process, recognizing that it was really important that everyone saw each other as this is being developed. Mm. Because there's some people that don't like stadiums and don't like the Vikings. There's some people who don't like corporations. There's some people that get annoyed at neighborhood associations. And then the elected friends tend to be caught in the middle of that, trying to sort of cue up what their values are, what the enterprise of the city or the county are, and then how they can relate not only to their base, but the next election cycle sure. in the midst of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot of anxiety. But
a lot of agendas.
Right. And tons of agendas. And what I saw right away that was emerging very clearly to me is that everyone had a narrative they told themselves about how they were to lead.
Mm-hmm.
And if I had the privilege of them sharing that with me, every time I was in a room that related to them, I would be sure to be cognizant of what their goals and values were on a personal level in relation to their institution. And then the biggest deal of all, $1 million deals, $100 million deals, $1 billion deals are always people in a room making a decision.
Yeah.
Now, there may be 1,000 decisions related to that,
sure.
but it's always people in a room making a decision
right.
that relates to 1,000 decisions. So what I really awoke to was that it's really people that make the world go round. We know that. It sounds silly. I know that we have these imaginations for corporations. What's the phraseology? Corporations are equal to sociopaths, you know, in terms of their, like, if you were to just say, what is a corporation? Well, at a very human level, that's what I'm most interested in.
Right.
Rather than thinking of the city of Minneapolis. No, I think about this person leading this ward, their staff, what is it they're trying to accomplish and how can I help further that? Look for the leverage.
Mm-hmm.
And what I found was that everyone did want to do and had to deliver on what it is they were promising to whoever it was, to their electorate, to their shareholders, to their company, to their employees. And if I was able to be there and help highlight what all the other silos, all the other companies also needed out of proximity, about a place, then it would work. While it was always an uneven conversation, whether I talked to a building owner or a developer or a neighborhood resident or an elected official, in the end, because we were systematic, I had a list of like 25 people that anytime a decision made, anytime there was a meeting, anytime there was their input was needed and wanted, I would either get another one-on-one meeting or send them information, solicit input. So after 2 years, we came up with this platform. We call it Easttown. It celebrates Elliott Park as a historic neighborhood. Downtown East is this really interesting kind of mashup of like riverfront development, and now corporate is emerging and new parks.
Yeah.
The stadium is in Downtown East. And together, we weave this east side of downtown narrative. But I'll comment that when it comes to like trying to pull everyone into the team, it's super uneven.
Yeah.
It sometimes was fitful. We did a crazy stunt, by the way, because we didn't have a big budget for this. And so I reached out to the Biz Journal and the Star Tribune and just began telling them, hey, here's what we're working on, developing a district idea. And when it came down to the naming, which is really when the press like perks up, oh, you're going to rename a part of town. We gave them the full list of names. Some were bad. Some were they were intentionally not. We knew we weren't going to pick them. But we thought, since we don't have the money to like do this like serious market test, let's just let it fly.
Right. Let's let the press do the market test for us.
That's right. And it was both exciting and painful at the same time.
That's pretty amazing.
And one of the funniest coverage articles was the City Pages reported on our naming, because we released the name. The names, there were a ton of names, but one of them was SoFa, south of Fifth Avenue, you know, kind of in the spirit of Coho and Soho and that whole thing. And again, I just want to say, we never were seriously considering that. In fact, everyone was saying, just keep it east something. Don't be, this is Minnesota. Be practical, be like smart about this, not try to be New York, be Minnesota. So, but anyway, the City Pages, the quote was, great. So I pay for a stadium and all I get is a crappy SoFa. That was the whole deal.
I like it.
But in the end, we named it again, Easttown. Town, of course, can speak to a lot of things. For us, it means community, relationships, connectivity, up and down the ladder from small to huge and everything in between. It's just a name.
Yeah.
Like Uptown is just a name. Now we have many years ahead of us to bring meaning to that. But there's still some politicians that aren't grooving on it. There's some developers who love it. There's some who don't like it. Again, because we're not putting signs everywhere.
Sure.
We have a digital presence. We have a narrative. I continue to engage in media and press as story. It's about community. And I believe over time it will become an informal way to refer to an area.
Because that community is just constantly growing, like crazy, right? So, you know, putting some actual definition around it, I think, is healthy, right?
Right. Right. And the key thing for me as a leader that I've had to keep reminding myself when someone gets upset about it. And by the way, people tend to get upset about things that feel like it's out of their control.
Yeah, sure.
Whether you're a company leader or you're an elected official, you like to feel like you can control the things that will have the most impact you. Or if a constituent, and that constituent could be your VP, if you're a CEO, or it could be a worker, like when something happens, you want to be able to say, well, actually, they can't do that. Or, you know, you want to have power in that situation.
Yeah.
But when you're talking about collective impact, when you're talking about lots of people, organizations, voices, I've had to learn to deal with sometimes people not liking the idea. Some people saying, you should have named it that. That's a stupid idea. I think that's a terrible idea. And then going back to, why do we do this? This is best practices. We had 2 years. We asked all the questions. We invited people in. It's a simple but poignant way to bring together an area that has $3 billion of development. And now we're going to have to live into it.
Yeah.
And so I play the averages a little bit. And at the same time, recognize that when I reground myself in the work and the idea, regardless of what various people in silos do or spark, I'm sort of grounded in the deep and long-term work.
What I hear you saying is it starts with those, really understanding those individuals instead of making broad decisions. assumptions about groups and areas. I find that in business as well, where people will say, well, that department, they do this, and that's what their values are and their core is, but they don't actually know anybody in there or intimately, right? They don't actually talk to anybody. Same way with, I can hear what you're saying, is that that might happen in a in an area, in a district or a community, or where the people are like, those people, they only care about this thing. And people will make decisions based on those assumptions. They'll be like, they don't want to hear anything about this. They're going to fight this idea well before they even talk to anybody.
Right. And that's where you're describing sort of kind of a universal understanding we're talking about. This can be within company. It can be in this larger narrative mm-hmm. of multiple stakeholders. But I've always said to myself, no institution is a monolith. I would say no department's a monolith. Mm-hmm. And that's important to remember if you're headed into a meeting where you're, you know, your idea is disliked by at least a segment, maybe a majority of that group mm-hmm. or that department, to actually remind yourself nothing's a monolith. Everything's dynamic. Things yeah. can change and turn quickly in all facets of the human experience. Yeah. Yeah. And so if you go in thinking, well, who's the outlier that maybe I can align with, or who is it that I need to pay attention to, or my favorite when I go into an environment that's conflicted and I know who that person is that's against me, is to actually meet with them if they'll meet with me, understand what their critique is yep. so I can begin to build a narrative that will at least begin to influence a fair dialogue. Mm-hmm. And then again, most importantly, recognize that nothing is a monolith.
Right.
And this is where I think there can be a lot of different inroads. And to that side of things, I think it's very important to recognize that true change, true innovation is incredible work. It's a lot of meetings. It's more meetings. And the meetings aren't like just committee stuff. It's no. like, I need to meet with that person.
Yep.
Because something sparked in that meeting that I'm concerned might be a larger issue. And I back to relationship. When I've taken the time to circle back, like I sit in meetings and I'm constantly making notes about how the conversations are going with individuals and peoples and saying, I need to follow up with that. I need to follow up with that. I need to follow up with that. Mm-hmm. And that is a person.
Yeah.
And I have found if I do that due diligence of doing the one-on-ones, and then when that next important meeting comes, having a point of connection, even if it's a conflictual point of connection,
yeah.
being able to have that so that you can transparently say, this is what we need to work on.
Interesting.
And so-and-so has expressed deep concern about this, and I just want to call that out. So you've got that knowledge-based relationship, even though you disagree with each other. Mm-hmm. And here's why I want us to stay in this space and keep working on this idea. I mean, those are some of the dynamics yeah. that I see
no, that, makes a lot
that
of
are
sense.
Really challenging.
I like productive. That you said about keeping those detailed notes during meetings. I used to work with a woman had amazing shorthand that would she would attach to the notes that also would express the body language of people in the group to kind of when she would say to like follow up on this, she would have this little shorthand that would tell her what the tone might be when she walks into that or to remind her what that might be. Was really smart because just like you're saying, like she was always working with a very diverse group of backgrounds, trying to get them all their agendas to align in a way that would benefit them. But they walk in thinking, how am I going to get what I think I want? Versus, wait, I could be presented with a new idea here that I should be open to. But that's not usually how people enter those things, right?
Right. That's a fantastic idea. Like to help you remember. I mean, I work 80 to 90 hours a week, a lot of passion work and projects for 4 organizations. Yeah. And I'm constantly making notes that have to always remind myself of what happened in that meeting.
Right. Yep. So how have you found success when you're talking with these groups and you're up against what seems probably pretty obvious that they're scared of change? And how have you approached those conversations in a way that you found success, Dan?
Yeah, though that's a great question. And I'll use a specific project to maybe tease that out a little bit. Downtown Minneapolis has historically been a place where people make deals. It's also a place where you come for sporting events, mm-hmm. Lots of hospitality. You do, of course, come here you know, to pay parking tickets and go to court and really hard stuff.
Right, yeah.
But largely it's celebratory, largely it's transactional, and largely there's just a lot of money coming and going. Like something like 36% of the entire state's tax base is coming from commercial properties in downtown Minneapolis. At the same time, now that we're in this resurgence of people living downtown, 44,000 residents, there's probably 2,000 units under construction right now. They're mostly expensive units. I mean, there's some affordable housing being done, but mostly expensive. So there's a trend to wealthier people or more resource people living downtown.
Young professionals, right?
Right, right. And we've also come to acknowledge in Minnesota, we face these gaps of income attached to or connected to racial narratives and socioeconomic narratives that are profoundly challenging in terms of not only ourselves and who we are as Minnesotans, but when you sort of measure it versus other states, we're really low on the list of like income to an actual cultural, racial demographic. Well, in downtown, it's skewed even more as to who are the decision makers and who's making the most money and who's running companies and who's on the boards. And so 2 years ago, I began this conversation, and we're supported by grant work, to say, how can downtown become more inclusive? And initially, I began just doing some background and research on the philosophy of American downtowns, you know, and we are kind of anomalies, frankly, to like European that doesn't have as much like downtowns. They've got like rolling historic hundreds of years of tradition. But in the United States, we grew fast. We're a young country. We're driven by a lot of free market. So we have high towers. We got a lot of transactional, a lot of density, but it's not necessarily livable. It's not necessarily a whole.
Or enjoyable.
Right. There's harsh angles to it. And also, some people just don't feel like it's their downtown. They don't feel welcome downtown. And I've found in anecdotal and sort of qualitative research that, there are some folks of cultural groups that like the downtown is not welcoming to me. I'm not interested in it. And I'm like, whoa, 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 wait a minute. This is everyone's downtown. So we took on a project of seeing if we could get together business, cross sector, electeds, private sector, and nonprofit leaders. That was a nice mix of leaders, middle management mostly, and then a third of them were specialists in diversity, equity, inclusion.
Okay.
A third of them were folks who maybe work maybe for the city or for an architectural firm, and they're applying principles of diversity, equity, inclusion in sort of their work, policy making, designing buildings, all that. And then another third are just sort of a broad mix of business people who are like, yeah, I'd like downtown to be more inclusive. I'd like to learn more about diversity, equity, inclusion. So we put together something called an Inclusive Downtown Think Tank, sent out the invites. The Minneapolis Downtown Council partnered with the YMCA, which just built a new space in the Gavede Common, and they call it the Equity Innovation Center. And this is where I want to start to get to your question about how do we build teams and how do we actually get at some of these really conflicted situations, come with good results. Well, I first of all knew if it was going to be inclusion as a white, straight male, I had to partner up with a mentor. So Dr. Hedy Lamarr-Walls is the Chief Social Responsibility Officer for the YMCA. She's a matriarch in the Black community. She's someone who speaks to these matters with a lot of credibility. She was willing to partner with me so we would co-convene in the Equity Center space a series of think tanks. And so over a year, we called the Downtown Inclusive Think Tank, brought all these 90 people agreed to be a part of these meetings.
Wow.
And we worked our way through a process of coming at diversity, equity, inclusion through the lens of housing, through the lens of marketplace, through the lens of affordability, through the lens of access, and just all the pieces that we tend to focus on. And we're able to develop a collective impact statement over several months, which I can refer to. But the discipline was bringing up issues that were hard to talk about, having credible people talking and facilitating, and this philosophical approach of creating, this is my language, create a container that's safe enough for everyone who wants to stay in it to stay in it and be productive. Because I just want to point out, there's people on all sides who don't want to stay in it. I don't even know why they were there. Maybe they thought, well, I'll give it a try. Or maybe they were forced to be there. Or maybe they had to be there compulsory.
I think some people just think, well, if we put this together, people will come, they'll get stuff out of it, we go, right? But if you're deliberately sort of kind of creating a space for that culture to kind of grow and be supported and be maintained, right? I think that's something that people miss, is that the deliberate part of doing that.
And there's a, I would say I'm still a huge learner. I mean, I feel like lifelong learner. I've just had to make a centerpiece of who I am, but that's a discipline. And I think some people just do it better than others, where you can be, this is the phrase, a non-anxious presence in an environment where things are sparking all over the place. I mean, this is really fascinating set of conversations when you bring up diversity and equity and inclusion. Like, for instance, one of our key discoveries was that downtown, if we ask the question, are we diverse? The group would say, yes, we actually have a lot of different kinds of people downtown. Are we inclusive? No. Well, what do you mean by that? Well, we actually had some wonderful leaders come in and talk about, well, diversity is different kinds of people are present in the space or room or the company. Equity, I didn't bring that in the phraseology, but equity is basically saying one size fits all solutions do not work for everyone. Like, you have to individualize. And if you're going to create a system, you got to create a system that individualizes for those parts that have been traditionally marginalized to be brought into the swim. Right. And then the inclusion piece is that different kinds of people get to contribute and make decisions in the ways that may change the system, whatever that system is. We're a society of systems.
Right.
And so all that to say, when you put that kind of conversation in the middle of the room, there's some people that immediately power up and say, I don't know what you're talking about. Everyone's got a fair chance.
Right.
We all stand and you either work and win or you're too lazy and you lose, you know?
Sure.
And we had some of those spark moments where, you know, I have to make decisions. How do you continue to respect everyone's experience?
Right.
And then invite everyone to actually respect everyone else's experience.
Right, right.
And so
on both sides.
On both sides. Yeah. Because when you do diversity, equity, inclusion, things like shame, things like being defended, things like serious politics, to your point, they come flooding in a half minute.
Oh, sure.
And so I have found through this process, and we're now moving into another phase that's less think tanky and more action tanky.
Right.
Where we're actually going to have three work groups, and one I might talk about if we have time. But we were able to craft an agreement that we believed all people belong downtown, that an inclusive downtown is possible. We believe in the economic case for inclusion, sort of writ large. We believe if we increase cultural competency, we will increase inclusion. And we believe in the values of equity, innovation, sound economics, leadership, collaboration, and accountability. So then our work is to identify and address systemic barriers, redesign our systems to create a more inclusive downtown led by culturally competent leaders who are committed to making a community that's an equitable place to live, work, and play, and where all people have the opportunity to thrive, belong, and contribute.
How do you, Dan, show up in a way where you can not get defensive when people are shooting down things that you're passionate and your ideas, in a way where you can understand where they're coming from and then trying to move forward?
I don't know. At times I've thought, boy, I wish I wasn't so much that way, because we live in this like speak fast, make decisions, talk up world. I actually, when things get heated, I tend to actually get quieter. I mean, I'm traditionally an extroverted person. I have introverted tendencies, but I'm generally, I can talk for hours, right? But when things get conflicted, I find myself slowing down. I find myself pulling back and trying to read the whole room. And I would encourage leaders to think about this. And number one is to move out of like, how am I taking this personally? Like, if I'm a leader, and I tend to be a facilitator in most meetings. Like, I've got executive director, but ultimately, I mean, some of these tables, they're CEOs, they're executives, they're elected officials. They are the boss of me. I mean, even as executive director, they are the boss of me, right? But they're like bosses of bosses.
Right, they're the great grandbosses.
Right. And so when things are kind of misfiring in the room and someone just said something that was really hard and someone else got offended, I intuitively tend to pull back, try to read the room, and there's something in me that just actually tries to slow time down. I don't know how to explain it. Slow time down to make sure that at a minimum, everything that's happening, I can take in, even if it's like my world is spinning, that I can just take it all in, because I do know this about myself, that when that meeting's over, that's when the real work begins about conflict. I think that's another misnomer we have about collective meetings. meetings that we got to solve it all in the meeting. Actually, the real work is outside of the meeting.
Sometimes it's just to expose what needs to be solved, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. In fact, there's an analogy to my music world when I was at the Eastman School of Music. So, you know, we would rehearse as an orchestra, or I played in one of the jazz bands. You had 20 people in a room or 100 people in a room, mm-hmm. and you're rehearsing. And generally speaking, though, in those environments, and I would equate that to like a group meeting, you're not really practicing at a deep level. You're actually performing for each other. Mm-hmm. In some cases, you're competing for space. In some cases, you're competing for a job or the recognition of that conductor or to move up to another jazz band level or whatever.
Right.
And the deeper work of practice actually is in that practice room or with an instructor, with another person, where you sound like crap. Like where you, and that's something I was taught to me in the arts world. Like your deepest work is when you are really like bothered and you're having to like figure it out and nothing's working and it's all broken. And and maybe you do need to stop for a little bit and then that session, or maybe you need to take a break with that person.
Right.
But ultimately that's the deeper work. So when you're in these convening meetings and everything's going sort of sparking and it's not great, recognize that that meeting at that moment, the best you can do is hold that container, try to get everyone to hear each other, then everyone take notes. And then you, between that meeting and the next one, there's a lot of work to be done mm-hmm. to try to work toward not just consensus, but everyone hearing each other rather than talking past each other.
Yeah, I think that's a misnomer that a lot of people have about meetings. And one of the things I learned early on in my career that's helped me a lot, because everybody hates meetings, right? Everybody says, I hate meetings. But if you go in with an understanding of this time is to expose the work that needs to be done, not necessarily to your point, fix it in the room with everybody there and make decisions and everybody just leaves and go as a cannoli, right?
Yeah.
That's not what the purpose of the majority of those meetings are. It should be to surface and explore and kind of feel your way around what these possibilities could be. And then, like you're saying, take that information, leave, do the work, bring it back to the next meeting. And again, expose this is what the possible solution might be, or solutions. Now let's talk about those, right? Because I think you kind of nodded towards it earlier, but there's always the meetings after the meetings.
Yes.
Where that group now goes and meets with their group.
Right.
And that group over there is now going to go meet with their group. They're bringing the information back, and however they play telephone or translate what was said.
And they will. And they do.
Right. You know, that's the things that you just need to be aware of, because those are things that, I mean, while you could be the greatest influencer of all time, I mean, those are just things that you're not going to have a window into, right?
Right. Right. And recognize, at first, I think I was unnerved about that. Like the table would leave and then there'd be those four doing that sort of circle. And then there'd be some people moaning and groaning over in that corner. And I would lament it like, oh, why can't we just like all continue to work this out? Why do I have to do one-on-ones? And another piece that I learned, and I think this comes from some of the pastoral work, people just need to say things. They need to get them off their chest. And if it's with a subgroup that they sort of have a little bit of alliance with, and they can do that in a way that isn't toxic, somehow ruining something, we just need to let stuff, people got to blow it off. They've got to get it off their head. They got to have their chest. They got to say it. So that's accepting that.
Yeah.
There's always a continuum. Like that group could become actually really unhealthy and become disruptive to your table. That's a problem. But most of the time I find reasonable people, good leaders who maybe just have different ways of going things, just need to get things off their chest. Mm-hmm. Help them, encourage them to do that.
Right. Because then you can move on.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Because I find that I've coached a lot of people around this is the mob mentality. And I don't mean like in like a, you know, crazy, like a mob, but people will say things, you know, in their comfort of their group that they might not say to you one-on-one. You might get a different person. And so I'm always coaching leaders like, yes, sir, while you're meeting with the team, take in everything that they're saying, but there could be, not always, but could be some posturing sometimes that people are doing to say, I'm important here, so I'm going to say a thing that might be I think half the room won't like, but I'm going to say it because half the room won't like it.
Right.
And you'll know that I actually have some weight to throw around here. Yeah. But you take that person aside later, they might say, well, I don't really care that much about that thing.
Right.
Right. But if you don't take that opportunity, like you're saying, to do those one-on-ones, you're going to forever just have this assumption that this person is like that. And that's what their real values are.
That's an outstanding way to look at it. And I think a great ethic is to just really be disciplined to be perpetually curious about people.
About the individual.
About the individual. Mm-hmm. And never allow yourself to label them, categorize them, assume that the same thing is going to come out of their mouth. Even if a lot of the time that is consistent.
Right, even though they do it.
Part of even your relation, especially if you're their leader, is to not sort of allow yourself to get into that groove, but expect them to actually begin to develop and grow or change. And right. But the baseline issue is to just never box people in, mm-hmm. ever, for any reason. Each person individually is on a journey somewhere.
Yep.
And to maintain that as a leader, I think, is super important, and being able to set the table. There's one other project I wanted to bring up.
Yeah, let's talk
because
about it.
To me, in this space of connecting and convening, being a leader who, again, doesn't have the position, but has to influence through leading and bringing together coalitions. And because I swear I get paid to connect and convene, I was paying attention to this conversation about more and diverse businesses being downtown. There's been a lack of that. The changing retail paradigm is a huge thing, right?
Right.
I think I even read today that Minnesota has almost 10% vacancy statewide. Now, wow. Some of these are the big boxes going out of business, Toys R Us, but others, there's just seismic moves. But we've got a lot of built-out retail space. And in the downtown, you know, places like the North Loop and segments of that have got one of the hottest retail nodes in the city. Mm-hmm. Very exciting. And then after that, it gets fairly uneven. Like, you'll have some great nodes here and great nodes there.
Yeah, spotty, right?
Spotty. Mm-hmm. And so that's something that I was noticing. Mm-hmm. And then the third thing that I was noticing was that especially like elected leaders, nonprofits are always trying to focus on ways that can change this wealth equation for communities of color and those who've been marginalized or left out. And there was a study done by the city by they have an innovation team that flowed into like national analysis that families of color that have a business owner in the family are 600% more likely to actually be of gaining in wealth than an average person.
Wow.
Like
600%.
600%. It's an astonishing number because it's also in relationship to the average wages in communities of color. I mean, so there's this huge, like,
it all ties.
Right.
There, yeah.
So bringing that notion of business ownership, entrepreneurship as a narrative that will bring a sense of growing wealth for individuals and neighborhoods into the downtown where we have the most wealth of the state convening, transacting, to me, in the disruptive space of retail, felt like a convergence that was worth beginning to convene a private and public group. We call ourselves the Chameleon Consortium. Our purpose is to connect, incubate, and accelerate diverse small businesses in currently vacant downtown retail spaces. And how we do that, I should say how we are doing that, because April's our first pop-up. We have somewhere between 30 and 50 businesses that it looks like we're going to be able to put into some retail spaces. And these are all pre-negotiation, right? So it's undergoing right now. We're talking to the Gavete Common. We're talking to City Center. These places that were built to be interior malls and are especially sort of punctured by the change in the retail paradigm. And in an environment where there's a lot of workforce coming and going, can we create some compelling experiences curated through small businesses and diverse-owned businesses that will give them a chance to experiment in the downtown environment? And I want to say that at the deeper level, when you talk about building a team, this is a really diverse group of people. We have business leaders from North Minneapolis, from Lake Street, of course, from the downtown business community. Mm-hmm. We've got some large corporations, some small.
But you have like small businesses, and you have realtors, and
everybody.
Like banks, and you've got the whole, you've got such a group.
And so far, you know, we have been able to find that leverage point as to why they would want to be a part of this conversation and develop a new model mm-hmm. for retail. I mean, pop-up's not a new model. That's sure. everywhere. Markets are everywhere. But to bring in really diverse businesses that are different than just like the beautiful project at the global market, which is fantastic.
Yep.
This would be different than that. Uniquely sort of taking culturally specific companies and even just culturally specific leaders, but moving mainstream. Like yeah. we want this to be like a mainstream and eclectic retail experience with goods and food and like a really great encounter with these unique vendors. Mm-hmm. But I just want to tell you that because they're coming from different communities, because they're different cultural leaders, because some are at the city and some are corporate, like we're having to almost in each meeting say, okay, your name, your job description, your institution, like what's the goal of your organization? Mm. And I'm constantly on the search for that leverage point.
Interesting.
Because no one's getting paid, right? Like this is like all like volunteer effort.
Right.
I mean, there's a few consultants that are paid.
But what value are you getting out of this?
We want the businesses to essentially be the winners here, and mm-hmm. we're willing to work hard to do that.
As we're getting close to time here, I wanted to talk to you specifically. I wanted to kind of sum up what I feel like I've learned a little bit here, which is when you're dealing with these larger diverse groups and you're trying to bring all these different sorts of companies together, I think people in companies, but also in communities and things can relate, which is don't focus on the group, focus on the individual. And that's where you're going to get the most success. That's where you're going to get the most traction. So if I'm in a company and I'm trying to make some changes within the company or within my group, I can't do it on my own. I need those other parts of the company to come and help and join with me. But I might already have these sort of assumptions about what their goals are and things that they're interested in, things more importantly that they're not interested in, because I've heard them talk before and they said they didn't like this thing. That's kind of like the thing I want to do. So I'm not going to go over and talk to that group, right? I'm going to try to avoid them.
Oh, all right. No, you got to go right there. You got to do it. Yeah.
Right, exactly. Yeah. But what I'm hearing you say is like, no, that's when you need to go right at them. Find those individuals, those decision makers, those influencers within those groups and build relationships with them.
100% summary of that. And this is counterintuitive for folks. We tend, especially in Minnesota Nice,
oh, yeah.
we tend to actually say things here, but then we're super aggressive in the back room mm-hmm. or in the side room. Well, if you're a leader who's wanting to bring change and innovation, mm-hmm. then it's essential you can't play that script.
Yeah.
You have to be direct in a Minnesota Nice way, fine.
Sure.
But where you see heat, is where you need to go.
Yeah.
And you need to focus and learn and understand. And even if the whole thing falls apart, your chances of actually pushing through and creating something are higher if you're staying in those troubled places, looking for the connected leverages. Mm-hmm. Something I didn't explicitly say, but all the works, I mean, the church is a church, but these other three organizations I work for are technically called intermediaries. Mm-hmm. So the boards are all volunteer,
right?
They are coming there because they want to be there, or they're looking for purpose there, or they find some leverage to be there and pay a membership due. Like they're even paying to be a part of this,
sure.
right?
Yeah, sure.
But therefore, the core work is about connecting them and being passionate about their success mm-hmm. as individuals, as the front line, their company as the second line. And then strangely, even though these are associations, the third in line actually has to be this larger narrative of what's downtown. Because if I don't start with the individual, we're not going to get anywhere or solve problems. But then if you don't understand, they have to report to someone, their paycheck comes from someone. Like I need to learn about how that company works and who they are. By the way, that's one of my joys is like this insatiable curiosity. Mm-hmm. How does that sector work? And how does this company relate? How are they competing? What's their market share? Like I got just unending checklists that when I meet with people, I always like, as an hour up. I can't believe it. And then finally, but lastly, is how then will they be able to contribute maybe to this larger narrative of what the downtown becoming? It's just counterintuitive and it's very people-centric. But again, I've found success over this decade because I want the individuals in my board or on my teams to succeed in their world. And then I believe if they're succeeding, I'll continue to find those connections that will help actually everybody succeed.
Yeah. Well, Dan, we are at time, so I want to thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure.
I've learned so much, and I appreciate the work you're doing. Dan, if I want to connect with you, where's the most active place? Where's a great place?
LinkedIn's probably the easiest, fastest. Just look me up. Also, just straight to my email, dcollison@mplsdowntown.com is my email, and just shoot me an email.
Great. Well, Dan, again, I want to thank you so much for taking the time today. I always enjoy our conversations. I appreciate your passion for coaching and lifting others up. I wish you the most success doing that.
I am really grateful. And thank you for bringing me on this podcast. It's a fantastic set of conversations, and I'm privileged to be a part of it.
Thank you for listening to The Schmidt List. If you want to learn more about how Foundry accelerates innovation, check out foundrymakes.com. And if you'd like me to speak about establishing a growth mindset at your conference or with your team, drop me a note at kurt@foundrymakes.com. Oh, and the next time you're on the internet, head to iTunes and leave the show a review. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend, because sharing is caring. I truly appreciate you taking the time to listen to the show, and I hope you have a fantastic week.
Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise, and with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.